Counsel for appellant, we're ready. Are you counsel for appellant?
Yes.
Okay, you've...
You're on the wrong side.
Oh, we have different labels.
Our sign here says appellant.
It does. You're in the right spot.
You can switch it.
No, no. We'll expand our thoughts here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. We're ready to begin when you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my respected colleague, Mr. Sylvester. My name is Michael Schwartz. I represent Brian Sueda. Let's be honest here. If defendants are judged by a different standard because you're not like them, or they may have done something you don't like, we'd have a different rule of law. That's not the rule of law that we should have. And if the contract law is applied as it should be, if the summary judgment standard is applied as it should be, the dismissal by the district court should be reversed. The two main issues in this case are, number one, was Mr. Sueda terminated, although there's a sub-issue there, and that is whether or not, based on the offer letter he had signed, the issue should be whether he separated from Edwards versus whether his employment was terminated for any reason, and I'll address that in a moment. And number two, there's a question of fact as to whether or not Mr. Sueda's position was eliminated as a result of a workforce reduction. There's facts at issue in this case that the court not only decided that were disputed, but made inferences from. And the court is well familiar that in summary judgment, you not only can't decide material facts that are disputed, but all inferences are drawn in favor of the non-moving party. There was an offer letter on December 24th of 2014. In that offer letter, as far as relocation expenses are concerned, it said, in the event that you should separate from Edwards, you should separate from Edwards, and Mr. Sueda testified, as it's referenced, that he understood that to mean that if he moves his family out to California, works for Edwards, and he decides to separate, you separate, he would have to repay the relocation expense that they paid for him and the bonus that they paid to him. He did not understand that to mean what they then switched the language to in the February 10th, 2015 relocation agreement that they sent to him electronically, that while he was busy working, he just hit an accept button.
Are you saying that there's an issue before us regarding whether or not the contractual obligation to repay relocation reimbursement was even triggered, because it's not clear that that's triggered by the employer discharging the employee as opposed to the employee deciding to end the employment?
Yes, Your
Honor. Is that covered in your brief?
It is, Your Honor. And it was one of the issues that the court discussed in the decision, where the court said it doesn't matter whether we look at you separate or whether you look at employment is terminated for any reason by employee.
But where in your brief do you set forth an argument that there's an issue regarding how to construe the repayment obligation related to relocation expenses, and that the existence of that dispute precludes summary judgment? I just understood your brief to essentially argue that there's a genuine issue of material fact regarding when he was discharged, and that date matters because it determines how much he would have to pay back, and then also a genuine issue of fact regarding whether his position was eliminated.
We did focus on that in our brief.
And I've read your brief several times, and you know, perhaps I missed it. I don't see an argument in this brief about this. We need to send this back because there's a dispute about how to construe the obligation to repay in the first place.
If we didn't, we didn't.
Well, if you didn't, I don't think you can raise it for the first time at oral argument.
I would agree that that's the standard, and that's part of the reason we focused on this whole termination issue, I think.
Let me ask you this. One question I had as I read through the file and the briefing and the district court's order is, what standard was anyone using to determine the date on which termination allegedly occurred? I mean, people are arguing about, was he terminated? If so, when? But no one really says. And here's how we're determining that he was terminated. Your brief focuses heavily on notice. He was never given any notice that his employment was over, and all the communications were conflicting on whether he was terminated or on suspension. But what's your position on that?
Position on that, Your Honor, is that there's no facts in the record, none at all, that he was terminated or that he was given notice of termination.
What about the January demand letter, which says you were terminated back in October? Even if the evidence is conflicting regarding whether or not Edwards actually did a termination in October, doesn't that letter pretty clearly inform your client that he no longer worked for Edwards?
We don't think so, Judge, for this reason. What the letter said, and if you read it carefully, the letter said you were terminated on October 26th.
Okay? I understand that.
And the documentation that Sueda had gotten from Edwards did not say that. It's what it said is you're on a leave of absence.
And okay? I understand, but my question is, even if that letter inaccurately stated your termination date was on October 26th, why didn't that letter clearly notify him that as of the date of that letter, he was no longer working for Edwards?
For the simple reason that the only thing that letter notified him of is that a lawyer who wrote the letter was misinformed as to what happened on October 26th. There's no evidence that he was terminated on the 26th. Now, the lawyer sent the letter saying, you were terminated on the 26th. Okay, he did. He sent that letter. Mr. Sueda knew that wasn't true. The letters from Edwards said that wasn't true. He had gotten a letter before then saying he was on paid leave. He had gotten a letter after then, November 4th and December 12th, saying he was on a leave of absence. So what he knew is that the letter from the lawyer was inaccurate.
Does it matter what he thought? I mean, this was employment at will, and the employer can terminate for any reason and without notice.
No, it does not matter what he thought. And we don't dispute. We say in our brief, and I know this is in the brief.
So, but if Edwards is taking the position, we terminated him. That's why our lawyer sent him a demand letter in January telling him he had been terminated. Is there really a dispute regarding whether or not he was terminated as of the date of that January demand letter?
There is a big difference between having a right to terminate him. Okay, they had the right to terminate him. It was at will. But there's no evidence, zero, that they actually did terminate him. That's
so
the
just
distinction.
I'll just ask one more question on this point. How could a reasonable mind look at that January demand letter and think, yeah, it's possible he hadn't been terminated? Is the answer simply that it was written by a lawyer?
No,
Edwards?
No, the answer is in the February 16th email that went back to the lawyer. It's actually from me that said,
but that's from
you're
you.
Wrong. Sure, and that was communicating what Mr. Sueda believed, and how he could reasonably believe that is because that's exactly what he had been told by Edwards. Keep in mind, at this point in time, he'd been charged with theft of trade secrets, and Edwards was looking to see whether there were any trade secrets on his computer. They determined he was not. Edwards was looking at his expense reimbursements at Edwards and found they were all perfectly fine. He had gotten a bonus and additional stock options as a result of the great job he was doing there. And so as it existed at that point in time, Mr. Sueda believed that this leave of absence would be until things were resolved in Ramsey County. So it not only was something that Edwards had communicated to him, given what he had been told by Edwards, given the great job he was actually doing at Edwards, he reasonably believed that he was still on the leave of absence. I think probably...
Even though there's a demand to repay, which would only be triggered by his departure from employment. Is he still employed under your theory?
Well,
by Edwards?
Obviously, he's not still working there, but under our theory...
At what point, I wondered, did he stop? Under your theory,
being
employed?
Did he stop being employed versus, mm-hmm. Depending on how you stop being employed, his employment still has not been terminated. As we stand here today, his employment has not been terminated. The fact that you file a lawsuit about something doesn't create a fact that did not exist before. I mean, where would we be if because you filed a lawsuit saying something happened, now that somehow proves that something in the past happened? They did not terminate him.
They didn't terminate him, but his employment might have ended at some point prior to today.
Well, theory. Sure. From his active employment standpoint, his last day of employment was in September of 2015. He was on a paid leave of absence from September 28th till October 26th, and then he was on an unpaid leave of absence. And in the written documentation from Edwards, it was an unspecified length. So technically, yeah, you could say, based on that documentation, he's still on an unspecified leave of absence.
Still employed. I mean, you're not on a leave if you're no longer employed, right?
Correct.
At some point, you're saying he's no longer employed.
Well, I'm not saying that that has happened as we stand here today. Does he think that he's going to go back to work there? No. But as far as what they've told him, he's on an unpaid leave of absence. I think the more important issue here, as it relates to the substance of things, is whether or not there was job elimination or workforce reduction. Clearly,
does that have to have caused his separation, or you're saying at any point afterwards, if the position is restructured?
If his position is, if his termination is because of...
So it has to be causal.
I believe that's correct.
So then, if that's your argument, when was the termination date in relation to the position restructuring?
Well,
it seems like you're relying on org charts that were generated in March.
Well, we don't know when the org chart was actually first generated. And when you look at what we do know, as late as December of 15, he's getting written documents that he's on his leave of absence. Now Edwards decides that they're going to reorganize. That's not a decision they made the day they sent out the org chart or the email from Timken. That's
if there needs to be a causal relationship, in other words, his employment ended because his employment or his position was eliminated, don't we need to know the date his position was eliminated so we can compare it to the date on which his position was eliminated to know if there's a causal relationship?
Absolutely we do, Judge, and that's why absence...
So, I mean, if your theory is, well, he's never even been terminated, he still works there, I mean, then that...
Well, he certainly wasn't terminated as of March of 2016. He hadn't been terminated as of that date. No one had told him he was terminated. They haven't identified who terminated him or when he was terminated.
Well, that's why I was asking the question of how would a court make that determination? I've looked at the case law. I was very frustrated that there's none in any of these briefs of the district court's order regarding, you know, different context in which determinations need to be made regarding whether someone was terminated. And there's case law in, you know, the veterans area talking about, you know, when does a veteran go from leave status to termination status. There's case law talking about does the termination date depend on the date that the employer actually did the termination or the date that the employee was notified. The case law talks about looking at, you know, when was the last payment? When was the last time the employee was allowed to go into work? Could the employee have been allowed to return? It seems that there's case law out there that provides guidance in answering the question, when was this guy terminated? And no one's discussed it here. So I'm a little curious as to how anyone would make a decision on this record regarding when the termination occurred when no one is providing the court with any legal analysis which would enable that determination.
And I think that's part of the reason we're asking that this be remanded, Judge. There's nothing in this record that says when he was terminated. Even the district court doesn't say when he was terminated. And it is important
to
know.
Well, the district court said he was terminated in October, October 26th, but I tend to agree with you. The evidence is conflicting on that point.
On or about, he says, and in another place, he says otherwise. So, I think you highlight the significance of that factual dispute in the absence of that fact, and I think it is important that we know when he was terminated. Can you be terminated although nobody tells you that? Can you be terminated although...
Somebody told him in January.
Well, no. What somebody told him in January, Judge, if I can respectfully disagree with that, is a lawyer told his lawyer that he thought there was a termination on October 26th, and he knew that wasn't the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My respected opposing counsel, I am Court Sylvester, and I'm proud to represent the people of Edwards Life Sciences. As the district court found, On January 14th, 2016, outside counsel for Edwards Life Sciences wrote to appellant's counsel and said, appellant's employment with Edwards was ended on October 26th, 2015. That letter is undisputedly part of the record. It was authenticated by plaintiff's own deposition testimony, acknowledging that he received it through his counsel on or around the middle of January of 2016. And the only way to interpret that statement is that Edwards' position as of that date was that his employment was over. He had been released, terminated, was no longer an employee of the company. The only thing appellant says in response to that letter is, my lawyer wrote him back expressing my disagreement that I owed the company any money and my preference that the status quo remain. Well, the problem is he was an at-will employee. Nothing that Mr. Schweda or his counsel could possibly have said back to the company in response to a statement that his employment had ended could affect his status.
Can I ask just for my understanding, is the amount that was claimed in the January 14th letter, with that amount of payback that Edwards was seeking, is it different between, is that based on an October termination date or a January termination date?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? The numbers don't matter?
That's correct.
It's the same amount?
That's
okay.
Correct. The offer letter and the relocation repayment agreement both say that if your employment ends, it says on a prorated basis, but then it goes on to explain, if your employment ends during the first year of employment, you owe the full amount back. If it ends during the second year of employment, you would owe half.
That's for the relocation expenses.
It actually says that for both the bonus and the relocation expenses.
I thought the bonus was...
Okay. I believe that is correct. I believe that it does say that for both.
I was left with the impression after reading the documents that we actually needed to know a date because one of the documents required a prorated reimbursement. I'll look through that while you do your argument, though.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Because what I was wondering about that, I mean, that was a question of whether it matters in terms of the amount. And then my follow-up question is, if it did matter, did the district court award as if January were the termination date and you're just, you know, not appealing the grant with respect to those 3 months difference. Like you would just write that off because you haven't appealed that there would be entitlement for those months.
Oh, that's correct that there is no cross appeal here by mm-hmm. Edwards. So we're not contesting any of the district court's findings. Should the court find that it matters, you're right, we've not put that issue on the table. Our reading is the same as the district court's, that it doesn't matter, both because
January would be the very last date possible of employment. I mean, is that your theory?
February 2nd, 2015 was the start date. Therefore, any time up to, January 2nd, 2015 was the start date. So any time up to February 2nd of 2016 would trigger the 100% repayment. That is Edwards' position. In addition, we believe that it doesn't matter because that January 14th, 2016 letter was not, in fact, the first time that Mr. Schweda had been informed that he was terminated. On October 30th, 2015, in-house counsel for Edwards, Jennifer Dibble, sent an email to appellant's counsel which memorialized their conversation of earlier that day. And it said, we agreed that Mr. Schweda will be considered terminated as of October 26th, 2015. From September 28th, 2015 to October 26th, everyone agrees he was on a leave while the company tried to determine whether he had improperly obtained St. Jude medical documents on his computer or had committed some other offense like that. But as of October 26th, they agreed that he would be considered terminated. And then she discussed some terms that they had discussed about reservation of the parties' potential claims against one another, including the reimbursement claim at issue here. That email is undisputed. It is literally undisputed in that neither appellant's opening or reply briefs discuss that document at all. No claim is made that it's not properly authenticated. No claim could be made that it's not properly authenticated. Ms. Dibble put in a declaration as the author of the document that identifies herself as the author, that describes the copy that was submitted as being true and correct. Therefore, it's authenticated by the author's own declaration. The only thing that appellant says about that document is that, well, a week later, my lawyer wrote back, this time to Edwards' outside counsel, who had taken over the matter from Ms. Dibble due to her maternity leave, and said, that release agreement that you sent me about those reservations of claims doesn't really capture the standstill agreement that I was discussing. Two problems with that in terms of it being a response to appellant's termination. The first is it doesn't say he wasn't terminated. It doesn't deny that they had the conversation in which they agreed that the effective date of his termination would be October 26th, 2015. And second, it wouldn't matter if it said that, because again, Mr. Schweda was an at-will employee. As soon as the company decided he was terminated, he was terminated. They didn't need Mr. Schweda's agreement to the termination any more than Mr. Schweda would have required the company's agreement if he had said he was leaving the job. It's an at-will relationship. Either side can end it. Edwards didn't need anybody's agreement to do so. So we do actually have properly authenticated, undisputed testimony or documentary evidence in the record that supports the district court's finding that the date of termination was October 26th, 2015. Those undisputed documents and facts make most of the rest of appellant's argument moot. All of the authentication arguments in the brief make no difference with regard to the demand letter and the October 30th communication memorializing that October 26th conversation. The rest of the documentary evidence may give greater credence to the fact that appellant was terminated within the first year of his employment, but none of it suffices to question those undisputed documents. So on that ground, the district court was certainly correct about what the record shows. Opposing counsel mentioned this argument about the construction of the documents, whether or not termination triggered the repayment obligation as opposed to Mr. Schweda leaving of his own volition. I concur with at least one member of the court who questions whether that was in the brief. I didn't see an argument made that actually changes the interpretation. That argument was made below. However, there's a significant problem with it. If one looks at the language of both the offer letter and the relocation repayment agreement, after stating, the offer letter in particular, because that's where appellant claims the exception comes from. That says if you should separate from Edwards, and then parenthetically says, except through reduction in force or job elimination. So that parenthetical that states those exceptions are actions that would be initiated by Edwards. Mr. Schweda himself would not have created the condition of his job being eliminated or the company initiating a reduction in force. Therefore, the parenthetical would have no impact whatsoever if the document meant that the repayment obligation only arises if appellant himself initiates a departure from the company. So the interpretation that is being offered here not only is not argued on appeal, it's inconsistent with a plain reading of the document. It would moot that parenthetical language. Setting that aside, then, the only other significant issue to be addressed is this alleged elimination of appellant's job. And the problem is the arrow of time does not move in the direction that is being advocated here by appellant. The offer letter says that the repayment obligation arises unless appellant is his employment ends through a job elimination. It has already been discussed that imposes a causation element. He is obligated to make repayment unless the reason he was let go is because his position was eliminated. The reason that he was let go was because the company discovered that he was being prosecuted for felony theft from his immediate prior employer. The company discovers that, it is undisputed, in the middle of September 2015. It puts him on leave on September 28th, 2015, and then about a month later, it converts that leave to termination, as evidenced in the October 30th, 2015 email to appellant's counsel. That is the reason he was no longer working for the company.
Well, if in a given case, if there's a termination and then later there is a org chart that shows a reorganization that would change or eliminate the position, I understand the argument you're making, but why wouldn't that be just a factual dispute? I mean, you might have the winning argument on the facts, but why is that an undisputed fact if you actually have evidence showing later the position was eliminated?
Well, there actually is no dispute about whether or not that occurred prior to Mr. Schweda being terminated, right? Even if the later of the dates, the January 14th, 2016 date of the demand letter is used, there is undisputed evidence in the record that the company was trying to fill his position after that date. There is an email on February 1st of 2016 from an employee of Edwards, Vicky Siricki. She authenticates that document by her declaration submitted on reply in the district court. And it states in an email to Mr. Schweda's former supervisor that they were working on filling the position. So it existed. There's no question that it existed. It would be a factual dispute if the only evidence on this question was these two organizational charts, and we didn't know when the second of the organizational charts came around, and the organizational charts actually showed the same structure within the company. If we were focusing only on those arguments, there might potentially be a fact question. But there is no dispute that the company considered his position still to exist months after he had ceased to work for the company, months after the company had said he was no longer an employee. He was considered terminated. And as a result, there's no reasonable basis on which anyone could conclude that this record shows that the reason he was no longer working for the company was because his job was eliminated. So you, at the very least, have a lack of evidence to show that the position was eliminated, and a correct reading of the record would actually be that there is affirmative evidence showing that the position still existed and that Edwards was attempting to fill it prior to or after the time that he was conclusively identified as having been terminated on January 14th of 2016. I would also note that Ms. Siricki's declaration that authenticated that February 1st email affirmatively states that the position still existed after Mr. Schweda was terminated. And we might have a fact dispute about that if, you know, Ms. Siricki had made other statements, but appellant never deposed Ms. Siricki. Appellant never took any effort to come up with contrary testimony to suggest that her statement was incorrect. He's relying entirely on these organizational charts, which do not identify an elimination date for the position, if in fact that's what they show at all, which is not the case. But it doesn't identify a date of elimination of that position prior to the date that he ceased being an employee of the company. For that reason, it's not possible that the district court could have been incorrect that the record shows that he was terminated for reasons other than that his job was eliminated. And for those reasons, the court should affirm the decision below and sustain the summary judgment granted in favor of Edwards Life Sciences.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvester. Mr. Schwartz, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's two key points I'd like to make here. If you were sitting in trial and you're on the district court and Edwards presents evidence from this lawyer of a January 14th letter and he says, you were terminated on October 26th. Objection, there is no foundation. You weren't there. You're not the one that terminated him. There's no evidence that that individual or that that letter is evidence of termination. And what's compelling about this as it relates to a genuine dispute in fact is the subsequent letters after October 26th, where Edwards itself on November 4th and December 22nd said in writing, you're on a leave of absence. So when he was terminated is a question of fact. And the contract says except for, so you're right, there is a causation element, except for a workforce reduction or an elimination of the job. Now, when did they start that? Can you sit in a room and say, hey, you're fired, and then, or we're gonna decide to reorganize? Let's fire this guy. But then let's have the reorganization be effective a couple weeks from now so they can't say that we fired him because of the reorganization. That's a question of fact. And when you look at, we know that the 2016 org chart became effective March 21st. What we don't know, because they didn't disclose it, and is when they started on that, when they made the decision to reorganize, when they made the decision to eliminate Mr. Sueda's position. Two things in their brief. They say his job was filled, and as we pointed out in our reply brief, they don't cite anywhere, and there is no evidence in this record that Mr. Sueda's position was ever filled. The evidence in this record shows that there was a reorganization, that it couldn't have been dreamed up overnight, and that because we don't have documentation or any evidence that his position was terminated prior to the decision to reorganize and eliminate his position, there's genuine issues of material fact that have to be addressed at trial.
So if I understand your argument, those issues are whether, in fact, he ever was terminated, and if so, when?
Essentially, yes. And whether and I looked at it again. You're right, Judge. We raised that in lower court, but we did not put that in our brief, so I apologize for that. You're exactly right. So if you look...
Do you agree, and I just looked through the documents, as I understand the offer letter and the relocation benefits schedule, if employment was terminated within 12 months of initiation, he has to pay back 100% of relocation
yes.
benefits, but he only has to pay back a proportionate amount of the bonus. In other words, there are different repayment schedules.
Yes,
is
Your
that
Honor.
Your understanding?
It is.
Okay.
And if he's there more than a year, so if it's after February 2nd,
right.
then it makes another difference in terms of the dollar amount.
But they're not both 100%.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. But the biggest
issue...
So
then the actual date does matter.
It does.
Except that if this goes to trial and the jury says, yep, he was terminated in October, you're going to be worse off than the district court's order, which says, well, you should have known by January you were terminated.
Correct.
Okay.
You're right. And
so the district court, what it awarded was based on a January termination. Do you agree with that? Based on a January date. For prorating purposes.
I think what the district court said is it didn't matter whether it was October 26th or January 14th is what the district court said.
For purposes of the amount?
Correct.
But the district court awarded 12.5, so the district court did some sort of prorating. How do we know what the district court did? Did it base it on 10 months or 11 months?
I think those were the numbers that were on the...
It goes with the number and what they had presented
right.
and what the district court said it really...
It was in the demand letter.
Yeah. District court said it doesn't matter whether it was that date or the other date. We believe it matters a lot.
Well, you know, though, the district court said that, but then the district court then in the end said, I'm using the January date as the termination date.
Yes. As far
as again, it seems like we've got some questionable statements in the district court's reasoning, but then the district court sort of pivots and says, we're using this date.
It does. It does. And I think what...
And then your argument is you couldn't use that date because that's just a lawyer's statement regarding that he's been terminated. It doesn't mean anything.
Particularly when the documentation evidences at a minimum, that's a disputed fact. And in fact, from Edward's standpoint, it says leave of absence up until then. And when we get the org chart showing that within a month or two after that, they reorganized the whole organization and his job is gone... Mm-hmm. That's an issue for the jury to decide, and we would ask respectfully that this matter be remanded in order to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Thank you, Mr. Sylvester. The matter has been submitted.